Welcome to Handsome Boys Comics Hour. Hope you survive the experience.
Those boys are so handsome!
One writer.
One artist.
One weekly discussion of comics and nerd culture. I'm your host, Robbie Dorman, literature geek and writer.
And I'm your other host, Eric Z. Goodnight, professional artist and illustration nerd.
And we are the Handsome Boys Comics Hour, your home for news, reviews, slightly antagonistic banter, and much, much more. This is episode 49. Welcome. Welcome, handsomeites.
I think you're unwelcome.
Don't listen to him. Don't listen to him. He's wrong.
Listen to me.
How are you doing, Eric?
Oh, I'm just ducky.
Like in 16 Candles, ducky?
I don't watch John Waters films.
Are you being purposely obtuse?
Maybe a little bit. That and I did genuinely forget that his name was John Hughes for like a second there.
Okay. John Waters, John Hughes?
Exact same movies.
Yes.
I think that's who you need in the Breakfast Club is Divine. That would really enhance things.
I don't know if it would enhance it. It certainly would make it different.
That's the slash fic I want written. That's
Breakfast Club, yeah. /Divine.
/Divine, yes. That's what needs to happen.
Handsomeites, get on that.
Somebody has got the ability.
I'm sure it may already exist. We haven't really looked for it.
I really hope so. I mean, clearly, two men named John. You need to smush their movies together.
Smush them together. Yep. Someone's gonna eat. One of the Breakfast Club's gonna eat some dog shit.
Let us hope so.
And it's gonna be real dog shit.
Yep. It had better be real dog shit.
So that was an unexpected tangent.
Well, unexpected, but
I wasn't expecting you to talk about Divine in this podcast.
I mean, why? Why on earth not?
I don't know. There's not a reason not to, I guess. I've never been a big John Waters fan, honestly.
I'm not friends with a whole lot of people that are. I don't necessarily write people off that like, oh, I really like John Waters. They're kind of on the fringe of my network.
Yeah, I mean, I like John Waters the guy.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not a big fan of his movies for the most part.
I think that is acceptable.
They're interesting, but they're not good.
Right.
That's where I'm at, I think. But
I think I'm right there with you.
Yeah. This episode is brought to you by Monster Energy Ultra Red. Zero calories, zero sugar, same great taste.
0% juice on this one as well.
They don't even bother.
It is flavored with red.
Yeah, I mean the can is red.
Oh, clearly.
The can is red with some embossed metal, like, tribal designs on it.
It's embossed.
Yeah, there's embossed metal, like, there's, like, texture to it.
That's interesting. I've never seen a can that was embossed. At least I can't think of any.
That must be why it costs a dollar more than all its competition.
Well, I'm certain it's worth it.
It's not bad. Anyway, I think we've done enough dicking around.
We can bring Divine back in.
We'll have Yusef play Divine. He said he wanted to be in on the show at once, so maybe we can have him be Divine.
Well, I do love the idea.
But anyway, folks, I think it's time for checking in.
Yep.
Yep.
Check them all in.
Checking in is a segment where Eric and I talk about the nerdy things we've been up to during the week. I have built a computer.
And we're so proud of you.
I know, it's my first one.
You're a grown up now.
I know. It wasn't that bad. I expected more headaches than there were. There was a few, but it wasn't terrible.
That was just talking to my brother about this, that most technology, none of it's really that difficult. It's just putting the time in and realizing that the worst case scenario is you're going to ruin a piece of equipment or something. You know? Yeah,
which I luckily didn't do.
Yeah. So you're fortunate on that behalf. You found the right tutorials and you've done a lot of the good things. What are some of the resources you use to put your build together?
Yeah, that's really what I just want to say. The subreddit Build a PC. Mm-hmm. Very helpful. They have a whole bunch of links there, more than I can list. I didn't really use everything. They have a PC parts picker, which is, I guess, a good place to start. I wouldn't necessarily rely on that all alone, but it's a good thing to start. The thing I really hit up a lot was a site called logicalincrements.com. Mm-hmm. And I didn't really realize that was actually the name of the website, but you have a budget in mind. It will have a nice little spreadsheet basically that is color coded and kind of quantitatively gives you levels of quality and how much money you're going to be spending for that quality. And they break down I didn't have a full understanding of all the parts of a computer. I don't think most laymen don't. People who haven't, you know, worked on computers or are really tech people. They understand the basics. They don't understand all the intricacies. It gives you a nice part by part layout of what the part does, the best manufacturers of that part, what you should be looking for in it. And, it's very, very helpful. That's the site the Build a PC subreddit and logicalincrements.com. That's what I used for probably 90% of my research. And it's very, very helpful. And, those are the two sites I would recommend above anything else. I watched YouTube, tutorials for the build, which I think this is also on the Build a PC subreddit, is the Newegg PC build. They have a 3-part video series on YouTube, where a guy, the first part is just picking out components. The second one is actually building. He has 2 different builds, which are somewhat the same, but a little bit different. You know, they have just little different little nuances, so you can see, you know, using a different fan or you're using SSD versus a standard hard drive. And part 3 is all about just installing an OS and getting it up and running, installing drivers, all that kind of basic, simple stuff. But those are the ones I used. They were very helpful and they did not lead me astray. I got everything working and it's running right now. I'm recording on it right now. It's beautiful. I can't wait to, as soon as we're done recording tonight, I'm going to play some games on it.
Seems right. Like the right thing to do. And then I imagine you'll be checking in with a lot of games.
It probably will, because now my computer can run it without, like, chugging. Or being a terrible computer. I mean, it could barely run an emulator at MegaCon.
Yeah, it was a little bit sad.
But for those who have never attempted to build a computer, if you're looking, if you think it's about time you get a new one, you get way more bang for your buck if you build your own. And it's really not that bad. It's fun. It's interesting. And you teach yourself some skills and you, get a little education on how it runs. And now you can like service it yourself a little bit to a certain extent. And it's nice. It's like learning how to work on a car a little bit.
Yeah. I compare it to that a lot. Like I remember when I was working on my Linux server. That's what it was like. It was like a couple of guys in a garage working, restoring a classic car, except I was building a crappy Linux server.
But, that's really it. Just go build a computer. It's fun and it's easy. It's not that bad.
You've got me getting the itch, you know, and I'm wanting to build a PC. So I might as well just sort of roll right into that. You want to hear about it?
Well, I want to mention one other thing. I know I've talked to you about it before, but I think, it's kind of in line with the same thing. It's a website, orbitaloperations.com. Okay. All that website is a form to subscribe to Warren Ellis's newsletter. So you go to orbitaloperations.com, there'll be a form there, you put your email address in and you can subscribe to it. He sends out an email probably once, twice a week, newsletter. I mean, he's a writer, so they're, you know, coherent thoughts and really interesting to read. He talks about what he's doing, his projects he's working on, process, design, and a lot of stuff about gear he uses. He is, you know,
he's gearing it up.
Yeah, he's a tech head. He is constantly on the go and is, you know, he's always trying to improve and get the best stuff for what he needs, for what he wants to do with all his tech. And he talks a lot about stuff in that, and I think it's really interesting because he really just brings a very, like, pragmatic view to, like, I need this, and this thing worked. And he finds something works, he uses for a long time. But I love Warren Ellis, and this is his little newsletter is really interesting. It gives you a little glimpse into his life. It's fun. But that's all. OrbitalOperations.com. Subscribe to his newsletter. It's fun.
Well, I just did.
Cool.
You got 40 more things to check in with, or can I talk at you now?
Hey, Eric, what do you want to talk about? You want to talk about computers?
Hey, let's talk about computers some more.
Okay. Yeah.
We actually don't have to, but I'm just,
no,
I'm,
go ahead.
You've bit me with the computer building bug again. You had to go off and do this.
Of course.
And the thing that I am really sort of hyped up about, and I don't know where I'm going to go. I talked to one of our mutual friends who's very tech oriented. I was thinking, do I want to build it's called a NUC. It's a next unit of computing is what that stands for. And it's a product, that Intel makes. It's got like, you can get like an i3 and an i5, model processor. It's like a bare bones computer and then you buy additional components and it's a computer that's about the size of a sandwich. It's relatively easy to build and it's relatively powerful as well. But the idea was to get it and hide it behind, my television and play games in my living room with this thing.
Right.
And my question was, do I want to do this? Or do I want to wait for the Steam box that'll come out in September or November or 10 years from now?
That's the question.
And I talked to one of our mutual friends who's very tech savvy. He's got some engineering skills. And rather than giving me advice, he gave me a third option to mull over. Which is a more expensive product from Gigabyte called the Gigabyte Bricks, which is similar to the NUC, but better for gaming because it's got good, well, I would say it has a better integrated graphics. This is just me checking in with indecision over building a new computer that I don't really even need to own. Just because. Aside from indecision, I have managed to finish Legend of Korra Season 2.
Mm-hmm. How was it?
It was very good. The animation is some of the best that I've seen, I'd say, in many years. It's if you've ever seen, like, the old, like, Ghost in the Shell, the Ghost in the Shell movie anime, I mean, it's, like, almost movie-quality animation. It's better animation than the original series. Wonderful, beautiful art development. My only complaint is it seems to be more about an exploration of, I guess, the mythology of the Avatar universe. And it feels actually on a character level a little bit shallow. I'm less attached to these characters than I am to any of the original cast. And I think that's kind of where Korra falls short. It's good, but they have not managed to make as endearing or powerful characters as the original. I mean, I would say Iroh and Zuko and Aang and even Sokka, they're all really, it's amazing, like, the depth to the characters. And I don't know, it just seems stronger and better every time I watch it. Korra's good, though, and it's beautiful. I think we need to get you watching all that shit.
Yeah, I know. I want to. But I got a new computer I gotta play games on.
Well, you can watch, you can stream from, you have Amazon Prime, don't you?
I do have Amazon Prime.
Well, you can stream all of it. You have every bit of it on Prime Video.
I know, but then sleeping is important. I need to do some of that. And
43 hours a night.
Something like that. Well, that is just super exciting. Computers, Korra.
Isn't it though?
Warren Ellis.
Aren't you excited? I'm excited about Warren Ellis.
You're gonna love that, his newsletters. They're so much fun.
I'm looking forward to that. I am. He's a delightful old crazy fuck.
Yeah, a little bit. But with that, I think that's it for checking in.
I feel pretty checky.
Yeah, and then now it is time for the floppiest part of the week. You know what time it is? It's time for Weekly Floppies.
I'm all a tingle with anticipation.
But this week, Weekly Floppies is the part of the show where Eric and I read the week's books and tell you to buy or do not buy them. Very simple.
Good advice.
It's a binary system.
Mm-hmm. Except when it gets squishy.
No, it's still binary. It's just squishy binary.
Mm-hmm. It's like cuddly binary.
Yeah, exactly.
It's stuff binary.
This week, we are starting off with Red Hood and Outlaws, number 30, written by Will Pfeiffer, pencils by Rafael Sandoval and R.B. Silva, inks by Paul Neary, Wayne Fosher, and Jordi Tarragona, colors by Matt Yackey and Hi-Fi, letters by Taylor Esposito. So there's a lot of stuff going on in this. Roy Hopper is fighting off these weird gooey aliens and their ship, but then you got Red Hood and Star Sapphire trying to get a ship from Frankenstein.
Yeah, I don't know why it was Frankenstein. It just
and Shade,
a little random.
They have a pocket dimension, like it's a little tiny ball that's like right next to the Daily Planet. There's a little surprise guest at the end. I was surprised because I was not expecting.
Yeah, it's
that person to show up. Especially when we had seen. Okay, this is a minor spoiler. A Lobo that is more reminiscent of the old Lobo than the one that was in Supergirl not too long ago. Like, this is actually looks more like the anti-hero, crazy, cigar-smoking.
It's classic Lobo.
Yeah,
It's not a guy that sort of looks like Lobo. Lobo.
Yeah, he's very... I don't know how they. There's backstory about why there's two of these guys, but I was surprised that he's in this. I like this book. I don't think it's as good as that first one we read because it's making things more complicated.
I don't even think that it's making things more complicated. It's just I don't know. It's difficult for me to say why it just doesn't feel quite as good. I guess you could make the claim that it's a little messier, but I just think that the first one felt smarter than it is.
Mm-hmm.
This one is kind of revealing a little bit more of that underbelly, sort of the underpinning, and it's just not as intelligent as all that, but it's still not terrible.
No, I still liked it.
Yeah, it is fun in the way a dumb comic book should be. But it's revealing that it's a little bit dumber of a comic book than I was hoping for it to be.
Yeah, there's a little bit more kind of exposition, people like saying plot points.
Yes.
And there's more moving parts and it feels a little clunky to me occasionally.
Yes.
That being said, I still did enjoy it a lot. I really like the art still.
Yeah, it's strong.
It's very, very enjoyable. It's not so overly like comic booky that it, I don't know, it's comic booky in the way I like it comic booky.
I think it's a very modern style, but it doesn't manage to, it really is sort of hard to explain, isn't it?
Yeah, that's, I mean,
what you said. It's comic booky, but in the way that works. And I was going to kind of elaborate on that, but I was just going to end up picking on Jim Lee again.
Yeah, I know that
it's reminiscent of that Jim Lee. It feels like it's built on the sort of modern DC tradition of building off of Jim Lee.
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't have the shortcomings. It's fun and easy to read and it works.
Yeah,
but it's still nothing to write home about. It's modern comic book art. I think those words, and you have a very good idea of the way it's going to look.
Yeah, but I like it. I'm still on the buy side of this title.
Yeah, I'm a buy, but I'm a waning buy.
Uh oh.
They can start. They can still pull it out. It's not a hard nosedive.
No, it's just a slight. If this trend continues, then we might be facing a not as good. But I'm still interested. So
I agree.
Red Hood, Red Hood and the Outlaws, number 30. That is a double buy. Double buy. A few folks at home.
Totes my goats.
Totes my goats. Next up, we have Sinistro, number 1, written by our buddy Colin Bunn. Writing something. I wonder if he's written it. Is this his first title for DC? I'm not sure. Because Colin Bunn, we were reading his Venom title over at Marvel until it got canceled.
I was going to say, where's the Sinestro car?
Yeah. Art by Dale Eaglesham, who we've seen him before, and also in Jonathan Hickman's Fantastic Four. He did the art for a lot of that run. Jason Wright doing the colors, Desi Siente doing the letters. This book is really, this is kind of the replacement book for Larfleeze.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, Larfleeze is getting replaced by this in the schedule, I think, for the most part.
I have to say, from a sheer marketing standpoint, that's got to be smarter for him, even though Larfleeze was an amazing book.
Yeah, I mean, Joker comic books, anything with like really big, they had that whole big villain month thing. I'm assuming this is right up in center now that he was in the Forever Evil. They're probably going like, hey, look, he's like in DC now. Let's do this. He's like, it's like a tribal Sinistro. He's like fighting like these alien saber-toothed tigers barehanded. But then, one of his old lady friends who has like super yellow ring powers now, mm-hmm, is coming to bring him back to society because she wants him to reform the Sinistro Corps with the yellow rings and all that. How do you feel about this, Eric?
You know, I kind of felt bad that I enjoyed it. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like it kind of gets right a lot of the things that, what was it? Sinestro Corps War, or what was it? Just Sinestro Corps?
Sinestro Corps War, yeah.
Yeah, Sinestro Corps. Corpse War. Yes, Corpse War. Yeah. It the things that went wrong in it, this works in that it's focusing on a character driven story and interesting emotional beats. It starts with the premise of you having to care about a character. And I think that Sinestro was actually one of the most interesting things about Sinestro Corps.
Yes.
He was one of the characters that you felt the most for him. So coming back here, they're exploring his human side, but you know, you're not ignoring the fact that he's very clearly a bad guy. He's going to do some shitty things. I don't know. I'm looking forward to this. I'm enjoying seeing where this is going so far. Hopefully it won't just devolve to dumb shit, bad writing. But I can't imagine that happen. Colin is, I enjoy his work. I'm happy to see him taking over anything.
Yeah, I like it. I wish there was more about these villains, mm-hmm, the antagonists, the paling, they call it.
Yeah.
They only mention it briefly. I understand there's only so much they can cover in one comic book, but I think a little bit more focus on that would have made me more interesting because it seems like the most antagonism between, like, his villain, his enemy in this is, like, the scrubs that are now leading the Arkillo Corps.
Yeah.
Whatever.
Yeah.
Which I don't, they're not a credible threat, even with that reveal at the end. I still don't think, oh, I'm worried about Sinistro and his daughter and whatever. Mm-hmm. I don't feel like anything is going to come of that other than Sinistro winning. If he doesn't, that'd be more interesting, but I don't think that's how it's going to end up happening. But,
well, I agree with you there. I think that was just more an attempt to end the book on a classic, like, comic book ending, you know, that they sort of had to put something in there to get you looking into the next issue. But right. I think the rest of it is, it's a competent enough setup, and I'm looking forward to see where it's going to go. It's interesting enough.
Right. And the art is, this is actually from Eaglesham. This is, some of the best stuff I've seen. I mean, he was always kind of competent, but I really liked, some of his backgrounds in this. It was really good. And he probably, you know, cause it's the first issue, he really put some time in on it.
It is a nice looking book. I do question why Sinestro is wearing mummy underwear. But I mean, all of us, we gotta all have our hang ups.
Maybe I mean, it's a comfort thing.
I guess
it's a so. It's a comfort thing.
Is that a Simpsons reference?
It is a Simpsons reference.
It takes a certain kind of person to catch a reference that subtle. It takes this kind of person.
It does. So I'm a buy on Sinister number one. I'm interested to see what happens.
I'm a pretty confident buy on this. I feel like the next couple issues of this are going to be very strong. I'm happy to see where it goes.
So that's another double buy. Uh-oh. Getting on a roll here. I don't think we're going to change our mind on the next one.
Yeah, I think we need to fight more. So start picking more divisive books.
Our next up, we're going over to Marvel. Miss Marvel, number 3.
Yeah, I hate this.
Written by T. Willow Wilson, art by Adrian Alfana, colors by Ian Herring, letters by Joe Carrig-Magna. We are seeing Kamala, kind of still dealing with the after effects of getting her powers, delving more into like her cultural background and trying to deal with this, figuring out what her powers are and dealing with her parents. I mean, it's still heavily involved in kind of how her family and her culture, where she fits in, which I think is, the focus of those all actuality. But in the end, it has there's a little cliffhanger in the end that I was not really surprised, kind of not expecting. It's certainly compelling. Certainly gets me curious about what's going to happen at the end, the next issue.
I don't think there is a page in this that isn't compelling. It blows my mind. How have they created a character that I'm so incredibly drawn to? Like, 3 issues in, Kamala is already among my favorite all-time comic book characters. I mean, think about it. I mean, do you disagree with that statement?
My all-time favorite? I don't know if she's favorite.
I think that there's...
But she certainly has the makings of one.
I think we can definitely agree on that. Maybe yes. I am being premature because you never know. 3 issues in, it could go south really quickly.
Joss Whedon could take over the book
and completely run it into the ground. Yeah, I understand. Yes. Release one book every 6 months.
Yeah.
Him and Neil Gaiman will tag team it.
It'll finish when we're both dead.
I think so.
Yeah.
And they're both heads in a jar.
Yes, exactly.
No, it's just remarkable how endearing he is. And you know, something that occurred to me while you were saying this, you know, she's searching for sort of who she is as a superhero.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's a very smart thing to start a story like this with. Mm-hmm. Because really, adolescence and being a young adult, it really is about finding out who you are. And I think that's another thing that we all identify with. All of us have had to go through that. I think that's one of the reasons that I'm very drawn to these stories about young people. Does that resonate with you?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, that's why this works.
Mm-hmm.
We are neither of us were ever women or, Muslim.
My hands do get really big though.
Do they? I've never seen that.
Imogen! I will destroy it. I will fuck a gym right up.
I know. The art's still great. It's really nice. It fits it. The writing and the art really are synergistic.
Yeah. Synergy is a good way to describe this.
They fit each other. They fit together very well. The thematically, what the book is using, how the book is telling its story and the art style work together really well. But, good. It's good, good, good. More goodness. It's great. We can just keep saying that.
It's kind of ridiculous to keep saying it. Easily one of the most exciting books that we're reading.
It's definitely always on my calendar.
Yeah.
I'm always keeping an eye out for it.
It is my only subscription on Comixology.
You hear that, folks?
Yeah.
The only one.
It is the only one. I will randomly buy stuff. This is the only one I'm subscribed to. This is the only one that I cannot miss.
So, yeah, if it goes without saying, we are both, that is a double buy on Ms. Marvel number 3. Great book. Really, really one. Wonderful and fun.
Buy it so hard.
Yeah. Next up, we're doing Superior Spider-Man number 31, the last Superior Spider-Man.
Thank God.
Series finale. Plot by Dan Slott. Script by Christos Gage. Pencils by Giuseppe Camuncoli. Inks by John Dell and Terry Pallett. Colors Antonio Fabella. Letters by Chris Eliopoulos. We are seeing Peter Parker reemerge in the last issue, and now he's trying to pick up the pieces, defeat the Goblin Nation, and tie a bow on all of this.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, I think it's really interesting and really fun and good. I miss Peter Parker. You can see them setting up all the plots for the relaunch of Amazing Spider-Man.
Yes.
When they broadcast things so far in advance, it's sometimes difficult. But the one page I'm looking at right now, when, you know, Goblin is taunting Spider-Man and Peter Parker quips back at him.
Yep.
He's like, you. And then Green Goblin, it's you.
Yep.
That is, I'm looking up and down a little bit on the stuff that happens in this book, but mm-hmm. that page alone, that little thing was enough for me to like this. I really enjoyed it. It captures, you know, why Peter Parker is such a good character, and why I like him, and why I missed him. There's a little bit of, I don't know, the whole reveal of who the Green Goblin actually is. It's a little silly for me.
Mm-hmm.
Like how it's still Osborn, but not Osborn. Oh yeah, I'm still Osborn, but I'm not Osborn. I guess I understand that because Osborn's been the Green Goblin like 40 times, and
right.
after a while they go, hey, it's not, it's obviously, but you know, whatever. There's a lot of throwbacks to old Spider-Man stuff, like, you know, the death of Gwen Stacy when he's rescuing, what's her face? Ozzy's.
The little lady
who's, Anna Maria.
Anna Maria.
Anna Maria. I wonder if she'll be an ongoing character or not. I imagine she will be to a certain extent. And you got little creepy grandson of Osborn's and all that
stuff. Yeah, I don't know what...
Little Joffrey. That's what he is.
Yeah.
Little Joffrey.
Joffrey / Children of the Corn.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, there's a lot of hallmarks to old Spider-Man stuff. Dan Slott is a big fanboy, so of course he's going to have kind of... There's to certain pages, to certain famous shots and all that stuff. Would you buy this again, or would you call it a buy?
To be perfectly honest, I only bought this because I felt obligated to.
Okay.
It's not particularly bad. It feels better than the other Superior Spider-Man stuff.
Mm-hmm.
There were some nice moments in it. I mean, it's not horrid. It doesn't make me vomit. It really, really is full of referential art, isn't it?
It is,
It is just, lousy with it.
I'm
flipping through it, and then there's the picture of MJ doing the tiger pose.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just so, so full of it. It's just crazy. No, I feel really obligated to buy it. It's not bad by any stretch of the imagination, but I think that really the place to pick up is the new Amazing Spider-Man when it starts back up.
Won't have to wait too long.
Yeah, it can't be that far away.
2 weeks, I think. Yeah, I feel kind of the same way. Where I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it mainly because it's Peter Parker again, and Spider-Man is being the Spider-Man that I like.
Yeah.
And I understand why they, like, the whole thing was like, oh, actually Peter Parker being he is the Superior Spider-Man. Blah, 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 blah. I don't understand why it took so long. I mean, it's just sales. That's the thing. It's just such a clear, like, it kept selling, so let's keep doing it.
Yes. Well, Marvel, as we've said, Marvel has a long history of antagonizing their readership, and it kind of feels like a lot of Superior Spider-Man was them kind of doing that. People love to say, "I can't believe Marvel's doing this," and then go off and buy the books, and then tell their friends who go out and spread the story, and then they buy the books. I mean, that's exactly what you did to me. And now here we are buying these books and talking about them.
Yeah, but I bought it because I am a buy because it's Peter Parker. That's what I'll say. It's Peter Parker, Spider-Man. I'll buy it.
You know, it's behavioralism. You want to encourage good behavior for sure.
Precisely.
But I'm not going to go that route. I'm not nutty about this book. It does have some good moments, but, I'm excited for the relaunch. I'm happy Dan Slott actually tried something different, whether it was intentional to antagonize people or not. I'm going to say don't buy.
Split decision. Superior Spider-Man number 31. Finally, last book of the week is Translucid number 1, written and created by Claudio Sanchez and Chandra Eckert, illustrated by Daniel Bayless, colored by Adam Metcalf, lettered by Ed Dukeshire. This book is really interesting, but it's certainly not totally clear.
Mm-hmm.
At first glance, it is a book about a supervillain and a superhero that are kind of like a Batman-Joker kind of relationship.
Yes.
Where they're like an eternal combat kind of thing. Where the horse is this supervillain that's just getting out of prison. And the navigator is this, you know, superhero of the city. And the horse is playing the navigator, you know, he's playing this game with him in this giant building where they're going to, you know, bomb's going to go off. But all of this is also interspersed with a story of this child who is like reading books about holograms and looks like he's making designs of like utility belts and all kinds of like a nerdy little kid who's like wants to be a superhero. It's not entirely clear how these two things are connected.
I don't think there's enough really going on in the book, but if you read, I warmed up to this after I read the synopsis on Comixology.
Mm-hmm.
And apparently the idea, you can see it in your iPad app if you go to the fake incorrect credits.
Yes.
It's there, but apparently the idea is it's told sort of as a frame story or in mm-hmm. both parts that kid, probably is the navigator.
Okay.
And it's supposed to show sort of, I don't know whether it's his life falling apart or just, you know, the sort of conflict between, what is it, literally the horse?
Yes.
What a ridiculous name. when he's pressing the navigator to say that he's losing his moral compass.
Yeah.
But at the same time, showing the motivation for what made this child want to be a superhero. I don't think that comes across in the pages. That being said, I don't think it's a bad book.
No,
I think it had some particularly epic moments.
Yeah, I enjoyed it still. I just yeah. wasn't. I had read the synopsis when I was picking. Like I'd read the solicitation, which is
right.
roughly the same thing.
Yes,
and you know, I understood where they're going for it. I just didn't understand the connection necessarily.
No, it doesn't come across on the page at all.
No, I mean, it's like, I understand what they're like, oh, it's just a dream or nightmare of this kid.
Yeah.
But I don't know. The art is really good. I really, really like the art a lot.
It's very strong.
Yeah. And the coloring is also really cool, especially near the end where he's starting to get like an hallucinogenic, you know, drug is injected into the navigator and he starts like seeing things in all kinds of crazy colors and
yeah, it turns into a Peter Max drawing.
Yeah.
Do you know Peter Max?
I don't, but I understand what you mean.
Yeah. Peter Max. Well, you can think Blue Sea in the Sky with Diamonds.
Okay.
I want to say that the Yellow Submarine movie, that the Beatles made is based directly off of Peter Max artwork. So that should tell you who Peter Max is.
The coloring is further, I think it really, they define the superhero kind of universe and world, and then delineate between that and this kid, because the kid's world is just gonna, you know, a very standard, normal, real world color palette, and then the world of where these villains and heroes are is very, like, garish, or, you know, more brighter and moodier, and it's raining, and there's dark shadows and bright lights, and
yeah, it's unusual. A lot of strange decisions in color palettes, but it works really well. It's very interesting.
It reminds me of actually of a Zero Year.
Oh yeah,
the coloring at least a little bit, like the weird purples and stuff, and the yellows and the neon style colors and stuff like that.
Well, I think those pinks juxtaposed against like the greens and turquoises. Yeah. That's a meme that I'm seeing more and more in comics. Like there was plenty of that in even in Infinity.
Right.
You know, I think that's, I don't know what is doing that trend, but I like it. It's better than just the blue and orange that we're seeing in every movie.
Yes.
I hope that these Easter colors bleed down into that.
That'd be nice.
Do you know who Amon is from Legend of Korra? Probably not.
I do not.
That's who the Navigator looks just like. Maybe you should Google him. He looks a lot like the Navigator.
Nice. A-M-O-N?
A-M-O-N. Just like it.
Oh, yeah.
He looks more than a passing similarity.
Looks a lot like him.
Yeah.
But
the horse looks like a horse.
The horse does look like a horse, but with like a dandy's wig from like the Victorian era.
He's Jack a dandy.
But I'm a buy.
Peanut butter makes him talk.
I can buy. I can buy into this kind of mythos and see where it goes. It's kind of really hopefully it continues to dig into this kind of relationship between this villain and like that Batman Joker kind of situation. I really hope it continues to dig into that mythology and ties together with this child and this world a little bit more clearer, I guess. I guess maybe it's too much to ask in the first issue.
I think that it's flawed in all the ways that you're saying, but that doesn't really darken it too much.
No, it's still very good.
Yeah, I do walk away sort of scratching my head and thinking, what the fuck is this? But at the same time, it's got me asking that question and wanting more information on it, which means it's compelling and it's doing its job. There's probably reason to follow up.
Yeah, exactly. I'm a buy on Translucent number one.
Yeah, I'm a pretty confident buy myself.
Yeah, it's a double buy on Translucent number one. And, I did want to mention that New Thor, God of Thunder came out this week. It was really good. God, I don't think I ever want to see anyone else do a Thor book aside from Esad Ribic ever again, because he does such a good job with it. And the storylines, it's like basically like Thor fighting a corporate, a giant terrible corporation with a supernatural being as its CEO.
That sounds amazing.
Yeah, it's pretty awesome.
I think it's really good. I think that means that Thor needs to take over Stark Corporation and become like a combination of Batman, Iron Man, and Thor.
There was a shot. No, but like Thor goes to like they end up buying up the town that, you know, that Asgard is like floating, that was nearby, basically like a little town in Oklahoma, and. Like he goes to one of their bases to like do battle with them, and he gets served papers to be sued in court, and he's like screaming in agony about being sued. It's really good. The new Rover Red Charlie came out. It's more of Rover Red Charlie. If you like Rover Red Charlie, you'll like the newest one.
If you don't like Rover Red Charlie, you're dumb, and I hate you.
Do you know what they call the Rocky Mountains, Eric?
I cannot wait for you to tell me. Please tell me.
The Big Big.
That's fucking adorable.
They call it Big Big. The Big Big.
Oh my God, I just want to hug that comic. That's amazing.
There's also a really interesting Go ahead.
I was just going to say Garth Ennis.
Yeah, exactly.
I love you so.
Yeah, there is also a new book from Monkey Brain who do, you know, digital only books. It's called Skint. It's only a book, like all their books. It's very interesting. I suggest anyone check it out just to take a look at it. The art's really interesting and kind of strange, but it's called Skint. It caught my eye really. I'm kind of intrigued by its premise. That's all I think we got for weekly floppies. So, you know what time that you know what that means, Eric?
What does it mean?
It means it's time for Nerd Boy Book Club. Ooh, yeah. So folks get your reading glasses. Nerd Boy Book Club is a segment where Eric and I will assign a book for the next week. We'll give you guys some notice. You'll read along with us and we can discuss it, you know, like a book club. You know how those things work, right? It's like Oprah's book club. It's like Oprah's book club, but better and with comic books.
Yeah, how can you beat that?
I don't know. She's pretty powerful.
She is pretty powerful, but I wield the power cosmic.
Do you?
I do.
Okay, Norrin.
Yep. Norrin Z Goodnight. That's what they call me.
Is that what they call you?
Yes, they.
They. The ubiquitous ones?
They're super ubiquitous.
Yeah. This week we are doing Max Fury, Nick Fury Max, My War Gone by Garth Ennis and Goran Parlov. This book is much in the same way as Punisher Max, kind of an iteration of Nick Fury that is not connected to Marvel Comics, the standard Marvel Comics universe. This is just very much, he does not have the Infinity formula, at least it's not explicitly. You know, he's not Director of S.H.I.E.L.D. or anything like that. He is just a warrior, a soldier, a spy, all those things kind of put together. This follows his career after World War II, basically, you know, in Southeast Asia to South America, or Central America, and him dealing with fighting these wars and seeing a kind of existential crisis almost about how these wars are waged and his role in them and all this kind of stuff. What do you think about this, Eric? We actually were together this weekend.
Yeah. And you had, together when I was, forever.
And I was reading the books and you're like, that is a good book.
Yeah. I couldn't shut up about it.
Yeah.
This is honestly, and I would count myself amongst the Garth Ennis fans.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm glad we're sort of starting on this point that I've read. I'd say the three other things that I've read by him that I would say are more similar.
Mm-hmm.
Preacher, The Boys,
right. Yeah.
And he tried to reboot Ghost Rider, 2006, 2005-ish? Not very good, very much like those other two books, which I enjoy The Boys quite a lot. Preacher is a classic. It's a standard amongst comics. It was one of the things that helped define the 90s and push it away from the McFarlane and Rob Liefeld era of shit. I think he's easy to pigeonhole, you know, that he just can only write things that are depraved and fucked up.
Right.
And we mentioned Rover Red Charlie, which is, it's got its depravity. It's got its fucked upness to it. He writes to shock people for sure. But this in particular, it's very, very good for a lot of reasons other than just fucked up shit happening.
Right.
And it feels like really contextually correct.
Yeah, it's set during war. Mm-hmm. Most of the set pieces are in the middle of wars or when wars are about to start. Terrible things happen in war. Mm-hmm. And he's trying to say that. Like, look how awful this stuff is. And even Nick Fury at points, the hardened, grizzled veteran is, you know, stunned at certain points. It communicates that very well. That's a criticism of much of his work is like, it's just craziness for its own sake. Like, look how awful this can be. Like, look, it's like how crazy.
That's exactly what everyone says about The Boys. And that's really the thing that bothers me the most about it is it's genuinely good, but it just feels a little bit too much. Like, how fucked up can I make this? This is going to be the most fucked up comic ever. The Boys is good, and I enjoy it for a lot of reasons. And I wish he would tone it down and just focus on making it great.
That's true for The Boys, I think. He works best, like, war comics and things like that when, and Punisher Max is in, very similar in,
yes.
in feel to this, in that, yes, there are horrible things, but they're horrible things because this is reality. Like, this stuff actually did happen, and look how awful it is. Look how horrible it is.
Mm-hmm.
The story really revolves mainly about Fury's relationship with, who is it? Hatherley is his name?
Hatherley is the,
His partner, basically, for a lot of it, with a congressman slash senator, and the congressman slash senator's first secretary and then wife.
Mm-hmm.
Those are really the four probably main characters of this book. And you see them...
They're on every recap page.
Yeah, from the 50s, you know, up through the 80s, basically. Yes. That's the time span of this story. And you see, basically, the corruption present in war, and, like, Nick Fury, even the grizzled Nick Fury kind of go from... He's called a cynic in the very beginning, like the first couple pages of this book, by Hatherley as they meet for the first time. He's trying to, like, refute that, I think, to Hatherley himself. He's trying to say, oh, I just operate in the real world. I think that's kind of Nick Fury's stance.
Yeah.
And Hatherley is, you see Hatherley, like, start out as this idealist and just get worn down by the horror and the futility of what he's doing. Like, you see him, they're trying to wage war against communism because they think it's the right thing to do. But just time after time after time, they lose for nothing. Like, there's no good reason for any of this to happen.
Yeah, there's an intelligence fuck up or just something completely out of their control, or really it's just a terrible, scenario to be in to begin with.
Yeah, like, these politicians are selling these missions to them or to the public, and they're, you know, they're soldiers and they're following orders. Nick Fury even is kind of told as like a frame story almost, because he's telling this all into a tape recorder, you know, after all this is over. He's just kind of recording his memoirs, so to speak. And he is beaten down, worn down. He talks about how he can't die. Like, he just keeps going every day. He just wakes up. And he just, no matter what he does to himself, where he goes, he just keeps continuing. Thematically, I guess the book really is trying to sell. You had said your favorite part, Eric, was near the end.
Mm-hmm.
What specifically did you like? I mean, where he was talking about, was it at the funeral or was it too at the Vietnam Wall? Which part was it that you were? I agree with you. That last issue, it's in 13 issues, I think.
Yeah.
The whole thing. And the 13th issue, I think, is the strongest one because you see all these people aged. My favorite scene was him meeting this Vietnamese general or soldier. I don't think he was ever a general, but,
he was the target of their assassination attempt at one point.
Yeah, and they meet at the Vietnam War Memorial.
Mm-hmm.
This guy is, he in theory, I think, are this the same a side of the two,
yeah,
two sides of the same coin.
Yes,
they're both guys who are trying to do this for the right reasons, but they are, you know, doing awful things to do that. They're old men who have kind of been just futilely waged war for 30 or 40 years and are just now, like, retired, and there's nothing for them
mm-hmm.
in life anymore. And they're just kind of looking back and seeing that for the first time, I guess.
I think the scene that I was specifically mm-hmm. Discussing was when he meets Shirley, and Shirley's older and she's gotten fat and
yeah.
You know, and he's like kind of repulsed by her, but it's just this sort of sad moment for both of them where they're both sort of reflecting on the path their lives have gone. And it's just very poignant for all the things that you've just talked about. It's, I don't know. It's hard for me to explain why I like the scene. I just really like her character. I don't know. It's very sad. It's very poignant.
It is really sad. I think that's what, there's no happy ending.
Yeah.
These people are all, you know, broken basically by the stuff they've gone through. And like, you see that, Fury and Shirley, who is the first the secretary and then ends up marrying that senator.
Mm-hmm.
They are lovers for a long time.
Yes.
Even after she's married and kind of their marriage is, she's the trophy wife and they have no real relationship beyond that. Her and, the senator. And, you know, you see them growing old and they're just kind of broken people.
Mm-hmm.
They're so full of life, I guess, in the beginning of the story. Like, they're both, she's like a wild cat.
Yeah.
Like, some guy is fucking where they're at a bar and she just beats the shit out of him.
Yep. It's a pretty great scene. And, you know, I think that, and we discussed it with the Captain America book last mm-hmm. week. And I think that it's a very similar, it's thematically they're similar, that it's the schizophrenic giant, to quote Dan Carlin, coming to grips with itself.
Right.
Nick Fury is a cynic, obviously.
Yeah.
But this book is sort of about, certainly from our point of view today, we sort of look back on the quote unquote American century, and have to reconcile with all of these terrible things that are laid out here.
Yes.
And it feels like the death of that America as the hope for the world, as we have to deal with all these terrible things that have been done in our name.
And the idealism.
That we're not the idealistic country that we think we are.
Mm-hmm.
At least that's certainly how we see it nowadays. You know, given that same amazing, I mean, I imagine they're all amazing, aren't they? How many hardcore histories have you gone through?
I've listened to a dozen or so.
Okay. I imagine they're all fantastic, right?
Yeah, I listened to the Mongols. I've listened to Fall of the Roman Empire. I listened to a few one-shots here and there.
I'm very interested in the Fall of the Roman Empire, but I'm very interested in American history. I think we're a very fascinating people. Apparently, we've always had just sort of in the fabric of our country this sort of conflict between things that just sort of happen in war and the idea that we have of ourselves. This puts a human face on, you know, with these four characters of that sort of idealism just sort of being beaten into the ground by the reality of the situation. It's less a story about Nick Fury and more a story about, you know, about the American century and all of that. Sort of told through the Marvel Universe.
Yeah, it's after World War II where they even mentioned that this is not World War II. There's no great evil we are trying to overcome.
Yeah.
And they touch up, there's like all these compromises that, you know, they make every single war. There seem to be these compromises that are, you know, it starts off with them. He's fighting with the French and they have a German commander in their group who is openly talking about a set, like killing, you know, mass murder of Jews.
Yeah.
And it's just a compromise. They don't care about that. He's a soldier. What he can get the job done, we'll use him. And then it ends kind of, the last story about this is in, was it Nicaragua? In the Contras?
Yeah.
Yeah, and it brings in Barracuda, a mercenary character that was first introduced in this Garth Ennis' Punisher Max run, who's a big villain, basically the main villain, I would say, I would argue, throughout that whole series, for most of it at least. And it's interesting to see kind of his origin. You never really get into that in Punisher. But he's like this big, gigantic mercenary. I mean, he's a Marine, but he is in it for himself and, you know, trying to make money, whatever, stealing drugs and selling them and funneling profits to the government. And it's another compromise. You said, Barracuda is the mean, he's probably the single most deplorable acts are committed by him in this book. But I can't say that that character doesn't ring true to me.
Right.
Like, we brings us back to that point of, you know, the awful things. Like, there are some truly awful things, especially in that part of the book, in this wholesale murder of innocent people. I have no doubt in my mind that things like that happened during that period, or the Vietnam War, or any of the other, you know, conflicts that they touch on in the book.
And I think maybe that's part of why this works. It's not any less depraved than anything Garth Ennis ever writes. It just, every word of it, you just sort of nod your head. You're like, yeah, I bet that happened. That seems really plausible.
Yeah. Frank Castle's in this too.
He is. He's awesome in it.
He is awesome. It's, you know, it's Vietnam era Frank Castle. It's the same Frank Castle as Punisher Max. I mean, it's just him in Vietnam. If you like the Frank Castle in this, you'll like Punisher Max, because he writes them exactly the same.
I have to read the description of Frank.
Mm-hmm.
It's one of my favorite lines in this whole book, which is just full of so much great stuff, but this is my favorite thing. You can't ever like Frank Castle, but you can sure as hell appreciate the man. He seems to come from that time in America where things were made just to work. The Model T Ford, the 1911 Colt. Don't cut corners, but don't overthink it either.
Yeah.
I just love that. So good.
That's really how Garth Ennis views Frank Castle, mm-hmm. and you know, the Punisher to that extent. And that's why Punisher Max is so good. He kind of understands the fundamental concept of, mm-hmm. Frank Castle as a character. Or at least the Max version of him, where he's not really tied to the Marvel Universe as a whole. And it was good to read more of it. It was really good to just see Frank as this kind of one of the stepping stones in before his, like, before he came back to America and became the Punisher. It's interesting. I would read another, if Garth Ennis did more of these books with, you know, Frank Castle in Vietnam or whatever. I would certainly read that too, because this, I didn't expect this book, because like Nick Fury in the Punisher Max run is very kind of just almost a parody or a satire of a Nick Fury from, mm-hmm. the regular Marvel Universe. He's like this hyper masculine lunatic, and he certainly is kind of both of these in this book, but it's certainly not a joke. He's not any kind of parody or satire. It's certainly serious.
It's a respectful handling of all these characters, I think, in light of the subject matter.
Exactly. It's respectful.
I think that's just another thing that makes it work so well.
Yeah, absolutely. It wouldn't work if it wasn't. We've painted this as a very kind of grim and awful kind of, you know, horror book, you know, horrors of war book, but there are like moments of levity and fun in it.
Yeah, I think
even among the horror.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's one of the reasons, like, you can't just beat someone over the head with just awful, awful shit. There's gotta be enough sort of bright moments in it that you don't feel depressed reading it. Not utterly anyway.
And I think that is really his kind of the conclusion that Fury comes to, like, it's at the end of the book. It's much like, you know, he's only happy when he's at war, and he doesn't know how to exist outside of it. And that's why Shirley never, you know, she never goes with Nick. Like, she has a choice early on that, you know, she could have gone with Nick. Like, she had Nick or the Senator McCuskey. Pug. Call him Pug.
You gotta call him Pug.
Gotta call him Pug. And she chooses Pug because, you know, it may not be all she wants, but he's not just this guy who can only survive, like, can only exist in war. Like, who's only, when there's not war going on, all that he's doing is preparing for the next one. And I think the fact that all these characters, those four main characters, all they have these kind of realized arcs throughout this series, I think is another testament to its quality. I really liked Nick Fury's his conversation with the granddaughter.
Hatherly.
I really liked his discussion because it calls back to the very beginning of the book and their conversation there. Mm-hmm. And it shows just how far how things have gone in the intervening years, the 40 or so years.
What'd you think about that moment that it ended on?
I think it was a good balance between this hopefulness and all the toll that all this has taken on Nick Fury.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems like it's a clear kind of message, like he's pondering suicide or something.
Yes.
I don't think Nick Fury is the type of person that would ever kill himself. I take it that way is that he and that gun are the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
I think obviously it's up in the air.
Yeah.
And that's part of the message. But to me, it's juxtaposing him and that gun in that last shot that they're the same thing, that he has been a gun his whole life.
Yeah. He's a tool.
Yeah, exactly. He is in that he is finally reckoning with that. In his old age.
Hmm. That's an interesting comparison.
And certainly you could say, oh, he's going to kill himself or not, but this takes place before Punisher Max. Maybe it doesn't. Maybe it doesn't. I'm not sure where the timeline runs.
It could really be sort of independent of anything, couldn't it?
It could be theoretically, but I mean, it's the Max universe is technically, especially considering it's Ennis writing both series. And he uses both Fury and Matt Frank Castle in both of them. I want to say that they're tied. They're existing, you know, in the same continuity.
It seems a reasonable thing to think.
But who knows? And I don't know when they never set up when he's actually, you know, recording his memoirs. They could be at any time. So that you can't really rely on that to say that, you know, what he did. But that's what I took away from it. I don't think that Nick Fury is a man to kill himself.
I don't think he is either, but I do think that it's a frustrating moment to end in. It's sort of a little bit like the ending to No Country for Old Men,
right?
Which
I enjoyed.
Yeah, I think it's a good ending, but at the same time, it doesn't really resolve anything. It just sort of makes you reflect,
right,
on what has been said.
Yeah.
I think it's a pretty apt comparison to compare this to that. It's a thematically, at least the endings, very similar.
Oh, yeah. It,
go ahead.
I was going to say that, yeah, I think it's purposeful.
Yes.
He doesn't want there to be a resolution. And
yeah.
That is uncomfortable for a lot of people. A lot of people hate endings that don't have a confirmed, and this happened and then nothing.
Yeah.
The end.
This just has to be one of those times where you have to sort of imagine everything landing where it lands. And I honestly think that's to his credit. It's very frustrating, but at the same time, honestly, I think it's the best possible ending the story could have had.
Exactly. There isn't an ending. I think that the same thing as No Country for Old Men. There is no, you know, just open and shut, boom, happily ever after kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Or even, you know, sadly ever after. There's this question is always there. He talks about Nick Fury in the book. He talks about, oh, I've drank myself to death and, you know, and hoard around and, you know, and I just keep waking up. And that thing he faces every day, I think, is what we're supposed to be pondering. Just this, you know, there's no, it's a beat that that ends on a beat that's kind of infinite time staring at him in the face. And we're supposed to feel that. And you're supposed to feel frustrated. You're supposed to have that kind of dread of, you know, of no satisfying conclusion because he's not getting one. He never got one in this entire book.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing ever ended. Well, it just kind of fizzled out, and not with a bang, but with a whimper. You know, T.S. Eliot line. And so the ending is, it's appropriate. It should be like it is. It should be just him sad, alone, next like next to a gun, because that's all he has left is a gun.
Well, we haven't talked about the absolutely awesome, fantastic, gorgeous the artwork. Oh,
God. We should talk about it. You're right.
Yeah. It seems, what else have we read with Goran Pavlov?
That Starlight book.
Starlight, duh.
Yeah, the Miller.
Yeah,
the Millar,
that explains why I like it so much. Do you know what this reminds me of? It's not as Mobius as the Starlight book.
No, it's clear he's kind of going for a war, you know, a dirty war kind of look. He's channeling kind of that into his work a little bit. It's not as clean.
Well, do you know what it reminds me of is the sort of war comics that Eisner did.
Really?
Yeah, that's, I mean, it's not as cartoony. It's like a more serious Eisner sort of look to me. Whether it was intentional or not, it's certainly what comes across. Particularly in the battlefield shots, the jungles, it makes me think specifically of a book of Eisner's that I have called Last Day in Vietnam. Really do feel like there's more, like there's some cartooniness to the characters in this, and it doesn't feel inappropriate because it harkens me back to Eisner.
Right.
And even though there's a little bit of that stylization, it feels tailored differently. This versus Starlight.
Right.
You know, that feels like it's trying to be more Mobius, and it's kind of, he's sort of changing his style or referring or falling back on influences of his to be tailored more toward, like, and it's a perfectly natural thing to do. Like, I could see myself, like, looking at this and like, okay, well, how did Eisner do this? How did Mobius do this? Drawing on that for reference as appropriate to the story. And I think he's very successful with it. The artwork is absolutely beautiful. I think he's someone I need to start stalking.
Right.
Honestly, it's dynamite, beautiful work. It is the kind of book that even if it wasn't incredibly well written, I would buy this for the art. Same as Starlight. Also well written.
It's really good, and even just the fact that, like, there's so many, like, kind of, there's scenes where it's just crazy chaotic, you know, battle, and it's very clear what's happening and what the story is being told, in every instance. You never lose track of where the characters are or what exactly they're, you know, fighting or what they're trying to escape from. There's a particular shot where, the issue opens up with a claymore mine going off.
Yeah.
And you see the ball bearings are ripping through someone, and it's in silhouette, and it's really striking. That is one of the pieces of art in this that I will definitely carry with me, regardless of, you know, it's really, it's black and white, and just show the horror of these devices of how terrible a claymore mine is. It's just this person ripped into, like, pieces. It communicates this thematically the same thing that Garth Ennis is doing in the writing. He communicates it the same way in the art, which really delivers it succinctly.
I think the artist doing the job that he's doing is a big part of how sort of the feeling you take away from Garth Ennis's writing. Like, I feel absolutely. Like when you read Preacher and Steve Dillon's artwork, it's gritty and ugly, and you feel really mired in it.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Right.
It's not badly drawn, it's just ugly. The people he draws are ugly. They're well drawn, but ugly.
Right. They're ugly people, and there's ugly things happening, and it's what it's showing.
In Fury Max, it feels very exact, very precise. Similarly, I feel Ennis's statement is very well executed. He ends things in just the right moment. He says just the right things. It's really hard to overstate how much I like this. It's really...
Yeah, it's wonderful. And hopefully eventually we'll read Punisher Max. It's really long, so we'd have to do a kind of the Sandman thing where we a couple volumes at a time, probably. Nick Fury Max, great, 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 great book. Really, I was expecting something good, not something this good. It was really, really good. So folks, next week for Nerd Boy Book Club, we are doing Casanova by, Matt Fraction, was it Gabriel Ba and Fabian Moon. It is Fraction's really first big work in comic books. And, they just announced the fourth volume soon to be published, so. It's completely different from the past couple books. It's a spy espionage, kind of a more lighthearted, kind of insane sci-fi weird craziness. I think Fraction has been on record saying it's still the book that he is most self-identifies with of his work. So I'm looking forward to reading the whole thing. Before we go, I have one more thing, Eric.
What's happening? What is this?
It's time. It is time for the Brian Lee O'Malley Tweet Quiz. Oh,
Jesus.
Brian Lee O'Malley Tweet Quiz is where I will go to Brian Lee O'Malley's Twitter feed. Brian Lee O'Malley of Scott Pilgrim fame, writer, artist of Scott Pilgrim versus the world. And I look at his Twitter feed. I pull three tweets he's written in the last week. And then I insert one of my own that I've written in my best Brian Lee O'Malley Twitter feed style, and I give those to Eric, and he has to decide which one I wrote, which one does not belong. Eric loves this. He thinks it's the best thing we do. Right, Eric?
Just don't mind me. I'm just hanging myself with my belt.
Be careful.
I know I could get hurt.
You could get hurt. So, Oh, no! Hey, so listeners, I'm looking for a new co-host for Handsome Boys Comics Hour.
Take an open audition.
Oh, yeah, anyone who doesn't mind being quizzed.
That's
number one criteria.
How about my ghost? Can my ghost record the podcast with you?
Does the voice sound the same?
Well, I mean, naturally, this voice never dies.
Okay, all right, then I'm fine with that.
Okay.
Number one, you ready?
Ready as I'll ever be.
Okay, number one, for the night is dark and full of terriers. Oh, gosh. Number two, literally me? More like, illiterately me. Number three, my wedding would be the lavender wedding. And number four, spoiler, the Winter Soldier was Joffrey all along. I'm going to do them one more time for Eric's and the listener's benefit. Number one, for the night is dark and full of terriers. Number two, literally me? More like illiterally me. Number three, my wedding would be the lavender wedding. And four, spoiler, the Winter Soldier was Joffrey all along.
You're playing this the most dangerous game again.
What are you talking about?
It's 3-1. You're trying to psych me out.
I don't know what you mean.
I think you've also found two things that we've been discussing lately. You're trying to fuck with me on that as well.
So I don't know.
Many levels of mind games.
I have no idea what you're talking about. Literally, I have no idea.
You don't know what, you don't literally know what I'm talking about?
No idea. Figuratively, maybe, but literally, no.
Handsome Boys fact. Listen through our back catalog. You will discover that Robbie has no idea how the word literally works.
I use it in the correct sense of the word.
Yes, but not the sense that you should as an English major.
Oh, whatever. You should know that my standards aren't high anymore.
I understand that.
Especially for myself.
Clearly not.
So, Eric, what's the answer? Come on.
My gut is telling me, I can feel it right in my duodenum.
Ooh.
That Winter Soldier is the correct answer. That's the one I'm feeling.
Okay. Are you going to go with that?
I'm going with it. 110% final answer.
So your answer is spoiler, the Winter Soldier is Joffrey all along. You're incorrect.
Well.
The correct answer was, my wedding would be the lavender wedding.
That was my second guess. Fuck. It's always, I need to always go with my second guess.
Your second gut.
Yeah, my sub gut.
Your sub gut is the one that's always right.
It is always. Yes. I think below the gut, that's just the colon. My colon tells me what to do. That's who I should trust. That's where the brains are in here.
Don't go with your guts. Go with your colon.
Yep.
I think that's
words to live by, Hansmites.
Words to live by. Go with your colon. So, Eric, what does that make you in? It's in was it 3 for 11 now or 4 for 11?
I don't even know. I'd have to check the record. I think I got as high as 33%.
Yes,
and
you
then
did.
I think this is bringing me down.
Under 300. Mm-hmm.
We're getting back down to the 25% range.
Yeah. Well, there's always another shot.
There's always
next year.
I will confer with my colon next time.
Yeah, go with the colon next time.
Google beat you.
So, folks, with that, it'll bring this episode to a close. We are the Handsome Boys Comics Hour. You can find us at handsomeboyscomicshour.com every single day. Every single hour of every single day. Every single minute of every single hour. Every second of every single minute. You can find every new episode there. Streaming and downloadable. And as every single episode we've ever done is there. You can find us on iTunes. Search for us, Handsome Boys Comics Hour. You'll find us and only us. Subscribe. Leave us good reviews if you like what you hear. More reviews, more good ratings get us more listeners. And we certainly are a fan of that. You can like us on Facebook. You can see every new episode in your feed, plus whatever nonsense we feel like posting during the week. You can also find us on Twitter. At HBC Hour. Tweet at us there. Our email is handsomeboyscomics@gmail.com. And we're on Tumblr. handsomeboyscomicshour.tumblr.com. Any of those places, please message us. Email us. Give us suggestions, criticisms, thoughts, feelings.
Cat memes.
Cat memes. We like cat memes. I love cat memes.
We know.
We know. You can find me on Twitter at MixmasterCereal. It's MixmasterCereal. And on Tumblr, the same name. Eric, where can they find you online?
You can also tweet at me. Speaking of the Twitter, my Twitter handle is Mr. Bad Example, spelled MR Bad Example. You can see my portfolio online by going to freewillunlimited.com. And you can also see most of the things I get up to online by going to ericzgoodnight.com.
So, folks, until next time, have a good one.
Rock and roll.
Did I lose you?
No. I just don't like talking to you.